Hi, everyone, and welcome to On The Box, the Geek Show's dedicated television podcast. And it's been a while since we've been on, but we are back again. As we said, we will be kind of sporadic, but that's TV's fault. We blame TV. It's TV all the way. Anyway, my name's Rob, and joining me today are the amazing Andy.
Yes.
And the wonderful Andrew.
Yep, it's definitely TV's fault and not the fact that we can barely string sentences. Oh, I couldn't say the sentence can barely string sentences together. This is the situation we're in.
Yes. You see what you've done to us, TV? You killed our brain cells dead.
This is the proof TV's bad for you kids. Stop watching it.
So, how are you guys? It's been a while since all of us have been together.
Yeah, it feels good to be back.
No, I was going to say that I'm absolutely terrible.
I was going to say, even if we haven't been here for a while, and we're just getting back into our stride. It's good to be back.
Yes. So
I mean, when we say that, like, we don't also do 70 other podcasts to get there.
Well, I know you and I do, Andrew.
Actually, I do two or three.
What was that, Andy?
I said I do two or three.
True.
I do too many.
Yes. Yes, we do. We both do. Anyway, we have been away for a while, but it seems like not much has changed in TV land, so we found some news. Who wants to go first?
Should we go a low budget first or some other funny story first?
I think low budget.
Low budget. Well, I might have just gave it away in a sense, but does everybody remember the £1 million drop?
That... Of course, that's my favourite. Davina McCall, maybe?
Yeah, it was
TV show.
It was Davina McCall, and she was asking people questions, and they had to put the money on a particular option, and then if they lost, they'd see the money disappear in front of them. And it was a strange show, because you've got, like, the questions, you know, and you've got multiple choice, and you've got people sitting at home going, it's this, you idiot, it's this, because they've got this big pile of cash. See, if it was me, I'd be looking at that big pile of cash, then looking at the question, then looking at the big pile of cash, then holding Davina McCall hostage and taking the big pile of cash.
Just think, though, when they used to not read the question properly and used to put it all... I've seen somebody lose £1 million on the first question for not reading properly.
Oh, God.
And Davina knows, and she has to sit there and watch as they put the full £1 million on that wrong answer and then see as their faces just go in utter shock as the money just falls and falls and falls.
I bet she really wants to laugh. Like, I know on the show she's like, oh no, it's so terrible what's happened. But inside she's like, you fool, you fool.
She probably is. I'll
I bet she thought it's just like got a giant net at the bottom of the tube.
But but anyway, Channel 4 has announced that they are bringing back the £1 million drop.
Okay.
So we get more droppage action. And
that's not a good thing to say when you're talking about Davina McCall.
But it's got a new name.
Yeah.
It's not the £1 million drop anymore.
Okay.
It is now the 100K drop.
What, the 100,000 pound drop?
No, the 100K drop.
The 100 kilometre drop.
No, they've just got 100 letter K's. Like, that's all they can afford now, just to cut K's out of a magazine.
The pound hasn't lost that much, has it? Since Brexit. Oh. I know the pound went down, but it hasn't gone down that much, so £1 million is now just 100,000. I mean, Branson's worth nothing.
This is probably the after effect of the bake-off being so, like, expensive. We can't afford the bake-off. Let's take it away from the £1 million drop.
So,
but
so that mean, like, the bake-off prize is now just going to be a Greg's coupon?
Be the special K drop?
Oh.
Anyway, this isn't even the most shocking bit about the story.
Okay.
I don't think. Because later on in the story, do you know when in the old series, the £1 million drop, where they had, like, the funny questions, they had the slightly rude questions?
Yeah.
Do you know? And, well, this £1 million job is going to be hosted in an afternoon slot.
Okay.
So the odds are it's not going to be live, and they're going to have to tone down the questions a lot. So would this be the same?
Is that why they're doing the £100,000 drop, because it's an afternoon slot?
It might be.
Because I've noticed they do that with other TV shows, with other game shows. They have, like, they used to do that with, what was it, you know, the Weakest Link. It started off as an afternoon show where you could win, like, £1,000, but then they did, like, an early evening show or an evening show where you could win £10,000or something like that. So,
I mean, some people only went away with, like, £5,000 at the end anyway. They're going to go away with 20 pence next. Yeah. And that's not even possible.
No, that's more... If it's that, that's more logical than my initial thoughts that the pound has devalued a crap load since Brexit.
I mean, they're going to have to change the money, though, aren't they? Like, and have it in fivers or something, so it looks roughly the same. Because if they have it in £50 notes, have you ever seen £100,000, even in them, like, little comedy films? Where you have the full briefcase and then open it up and there's like a little, maybe one or two bundles of cash there.
Maybe it's a check.
I think that's going to be a very quick game then, isn't it?
Maybe it's a big check, you know, that's been broken up into like a jigsaw puzzle. And so you have to move. If you have like a quarter of the check, then you get a quarter of the £100,000.
So the judge, well done, you've won £3,000. Fortunately, that's not how checks work, so whoops.
Yep. I always thought it was kind of cruel letting people see all of this money that they could win and then letting it disappear in front of them. It's like when someone's drowning and you're holding that rubber ring and you're just holding it just out of their reach.
Yeah, that is fun.
I always thought it was like that. You know, I thought
it's just out their reach. Yeah, they're actually holding it, Rob. They've got it. It's the closest and probably only time they're going to have £1 million in notes, like in the hand.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Then it's cruelly taken away.
Oh, do you know what they should do instead? When the money's falling down the tube thing, they should have a massive like burst of flame that comes up as well.
Oh God! Just to put that nail in the coffin.
That instead, Davina just like walks up, picks up the bundle of us, and just like puts a lighter under it.
I've got a really low
budget. She burns it all.
I've got a really low budget, but even more cruel alternative.
Okay.
How about if they lose the money, give them £1 million in old fivers, so they can't spend it.
No, because they can. They can take it to the Bank of England and get it converted.
Not when they've just done it on national TV.
No, they can still take it to the Bank of England.
Hmm. How about £1 million in Davina bucks?
Yes.
Not really money.
Well, you remember the pound notes, Andy? Remember the old... of course you don't remember the old pound notes. You weren't even alive.
I don't remember using them, but I've seen them.
Okay. Did you know that you can still take those to the Bank of England in London and have them changed into a £1 coin?
But it's really ironic that you won't be able to do that with a pound coins in October.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway... 100k drop, 2018 it comes out. So it's going to take them roughly another year to work out the format of the show.
See, I prefer mine. I prefer the 100 kilometer drop. So you get the answer right. Otherwise, you're the one to drop.
Okay, but can we still have Davina McCallby, the one who just like boots them off the platform? I assume they're on.
Yeah, she's basically just standing there, just waiting for them to get the question wrong, then just gleefully kicks them off the ledge.
I don't know why, but I've really latched onto this idea that Davina McCall is actually a psychopath.
I think it's because...
Yeah, she just does the jump, doesn't she?
Well, it's not just that. She has that weird look that even I thought she was a little bit crazy at times.
Yeah, she does have kind of those, the only way I find joy is through the suffering of others' eyes.
Yeah.
We're on to you, Davina. We figured it out.
Yes, we have. Anyway, do you want to go next or do you want me? No, we'll save yours for last, Andrew.
Okay, because not to brag, but mine is very good.
Yeah. Okay, so something weird is happening over in America, and it's not Donald Trump being the president, but it may be linked to Donald Trump being the president, because it seems like paranoia seems to be spreading all over America. Everybody seems to be getting more and more paranoid. And it's even spread to Netflix. Now, you know how Netflix has become the big thing in TV? Everybody has Netflix, yeah? Mm. And it's quite cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite cheap to have Netflix, isn't it? When you get right down to it, you don't need a terrestrial TV or anything like that. You just need a laptop and you've got Netflix, you know? And you've got a cheap subscription, which is cheaper than a lot of cable channels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some really good shows on Netflix. In fact, loads of really good shows on Netflix. But now, how do I explain this? According to a new decision by a US court, it is now a crime to let your friend use your Netflix password. They will be committing a crime. According to the court, using a password that isn't the account holder's for any sort of subscription-based service is now a federal crime.
Hang on. How are they going to monitor this? How do you know that, let's just say it was my Netflix account and I went over a friend's and just used it for myself?
It's not specifically targeting Netflix, but because Netflix is a subscription-based service, it's included in this, which means you can now no longer say, you can watch this on my Netflix, to your mate.
How do you in any way monitor that?
I don't know.
This is also just like that bit in the IT Crowd with like the really over-the-top anti-piracy ad.
Yes.
There's like some girl streaming videos like armed police burst in.
Yes, I remember that.
You wouldn't kill a policeman, steal his hat, do a number two in it, return it to his grieving wife, and then steal it again.
I can understand they're talking about subscription-based services. So obviously the court wasn't ruling about Netflix. It was probably something else, something totally different. But their decision has long-reaching effects, which I don't think the court has actually... See, this is the problem with legal systems around the world. Technology is moving so fast now, and legal systems can't keep up. So when a court makes a decision like this, it's usually because the judge is still stuck on the law as it was maybe 20 years ago and not how the law should be now. So the judge has gone, no, this is illegal. And then someone's gone, actually, what about this? They're like, maybe we should change our decision slightly.
Yeah, but Rob, the law in any country, including this one, doesn't really hold up quite a bit, because if you look years and years ago, there's still laws that are still active that don't really warrant. Not like, for example, there's some law you can actually shoot a Scotsman on like a specific time and date of the year.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you can shoot them in the back with a crossbow while standing on like, the walls in York.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a law now that says that all men have to practice archery on Thornaby Green. I think it's every Saturday, or was it every Sunday? From
Who's
a certain
Thornaby
time.
Green?
Hey?
Who's Thornaby Green?
You know, over in Thornaby.
I know.
But here's the thing, right? This law as it is in the US, this ruling in the US, right? I just want to give you an example. The judge who made this decision might have a son. Now, that judge might have Netflix, and his son might be going to university. And his son might say, Dad, can I use your Netflix to watch this show? And the judge would happily just go, yeah, sure, here's the password, son. And so he gives his son his Netflix password. So his son
and then,
uses...
And like, sighs to himself and says, I knew this day would come. Police, yeah, we got one.
And then his son, who has now committed a federal crime, I might add, this is a federal crime, which is a big difference to... I mean, federal crime, we're talking about like FBI level stuff, CIA level stuff. We're not talking some misdemeanor here.
Imagine getting your door kicked down and getting raided because you're watching somebody else's Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. And then that
kid.
No, that
kid. Like in jail and they go, what are you in for? and somebody goes, "Oh, I'm in for something extremely serious," and then you go, "I watched my mate's Netflix."
Exactly. But the thing is, that kid.
Unless it's all a ploy to cut down on overpopulation by making sure that all Netflix and chill sessions have to be happening in like separate rooms.
What is this, some weird TV swingers party?
Can't you have multiple accounts on Netflix, though?
Oh my god, can you imagine a TV swingers party involving Netflix where instead of the bowl of keys, you got a bowl full of passwords?
But yeah, that's another. You can have multiple accounts on Netflix.
No.
Like, I've got me, my sister, and my parents all on the same thing, so like, how does that work?
Don't know, maybe you're a dealer. Maybe Netflix is the new drug.
I mean...
Bacali Netflix password dealing.
Yeah,
you're not going to have any repeat customers, though, are you?
Well, this is the thing. When you get Netflix, you tend to binge. And then when you run dry, you need more. But they do say Netflix and chill, so, and you are chilled after watching, after binge watching, aren't you? But then, you know, the come down happens, then you have to come down.
That's not what Netflix and chill means in the slightest.
I know. But the come down happens, and then you start rummaging through Netflix, trying every single thing that comes along in the hopes that you'll find the good stuff again.
Or you'll get sent to rehab where you're forced to watch hours upon hours of Channel 5 or some really bad reality show to get away from Netflix.
No, you get sent to rehab where you have to watch Jeremy Kyle.
That's hard on the families as well.
Yeah.
Do you know, I've had to sit there and just watch my sister. She watches the entirety of Benidorm.
See,
he doesn't like it. No one likes it. It's a bad show. There's nothing else on Netflix.
See, I love the fact that you don't want to watch Benidorm. You're watching your sister watch Benidorm is more interesting than watching Benidorm.
It is, because she just sits there like with just this stony expression on her face.
You're trying to get like a homemade goggle box type of show there, Andrew.
I mean, basically, that's what it is. Just goggle box, but with someone who is getting absolutely no enjoyment whatsoever from it.
Benidorm.
You watched Benidorm, didn't you? I remember you talked about
I watched the first four or five series where they actually had unique storylines. Then the next five or whatever series, for example, it's still Benidorm. There's only so much you can do in Benidorm.
I mean, so there's the damning, Chris. When Andy Reeve doesn't find your show entertaining anymore.
Yes.
You've done messed up. This is a man who likes Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yeah, but that's actually... You can see what I mean, though. Any sitcom in a home or somewhere... I don't mean care home. in for like a family setting or even a workplace can go places, literally. It can change. Any show which is set and even called after the place that it's filmed in, you can't really do anything with it apart from as long as it's in Benidorm. It's... Having 10 series of something that has to be in the same club or in the same district even, all the time, gets a bit repetitive.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know how to follow this up. I know, it's
more like Benny Baum.
Oh, no, Andy, no.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on, that was a decent one.
Oh, no, no, no. You fail. You fail hard.
In fact, I think it's hard to make any joke as good as the idea of, like, federal punishment for sharing Netflix passwords.
Exactly. I mean, that's the bit that gets me about this. It's not the fact that someone else using your Netflix password is a crime. It's the fact that it's a federal crime.
Couldn't you get around it then by just getting your friend... Like, to just use a new password every time, right? And then tell you the other password. Because then it's your account, but his password, and now he's gave it to you.
Let me give you an idea of what actually classes as a federal crime in the United States. A federal crime or a federal offence. Basically, it's something that's made illegal by the US federal legislation. Many acts, including mail fraud, aircraft hijacking, carjacking, kidnapping, bank robbery, credit card fraud, identity theft, computer crimes, federal hate crimes, federal racketeering. I mean, the fact that aircraft hijacking is on there, kidnapping is on there, bank robbery is on there, and now someone else using your Netflix password.
I mean, that's the real problem. I feel like if I got in trouble for sharing Netflix passwords, I'd just have to go out and, like, steal a plane or something. Because if I'm getting arrested for a federal offence, I want it to be a good one.
I don't understand this. It makes no sense to me. A federal crime.
I know, it is ludicrous.
It really is. Speaking
of
which...
also on here?
Hey?
You know, it's got robbery and things like that on here.
Yeah.
But it's got violations of the Espionage Act. And you know, here goes better. Illegal wiretapping, art theft. But it says art theft from a museum, so if you do it in someone's house, that's fine. damaging or destroying public mailboxes. Okay.
Oh, obscenity is also a federal crime, apparently.
Immigration offences. And also... assassinating the president or vice president.
I definitely know what I'm going for if I go down to passwords.
Oh, that escalated, didn't it? yeah, so as you said, Andrew, it is ludicrous. And I think that leads us on to you.
Yes. Because speaking of ludicrousness, so for a while now, there's been a bit of legal trouble between AMC Networks and Frank Darabont.
Yeah.
Frank Darabont, he was kind of the executive producer for the first two series of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And then he got fired.
Yeah, I remember because his name used to appear at the beginning, you know, with the credits, produced by Frank Darabont. And I've seen his name on other shows as well, so I recognised it.
Yeah, and then there was a bunch of stuff with him kind of feeling he'd been let go unfairly. He's kind of trying to sue AMC. And so now it's kind of a fairly petty bit of revenge. AMC have released a bunch of emails he sent to them, like, during the production.
Okay.
And, oh my God, Frank Darabont is like a genuine crazy person.
When you say genuine crazy person, are we talking like... licking the walls crazy, or are we talking...
No, like... I mean like Davina McCall crazy.
Well, my next stage was going to be like long sleeves padded cell crazy.
I will read you an excerpt of an email he sent to Gail Ann Hurd and others on Tuesday, June 14th, 2011 at 10:39 p.m. Guys and gals, I'm in a state of absolutely boiling rage right now. I just kept Denise on the phone for 20 minutes making her listen to me scream. I hope she conveys to you what the tenor of it, because you need to grasp my fury. I have never been a screamer, but I am now. The work being done on this episode has turned me into one. Congratulations, you all accomplished what I thought was impossible. You've turned me into a raging a-hole. Thanks a lot, you effers. Everybody... especially our directors better wake the F up and pay attention, or I will start killing people and throwing bodies out the door.
My God.
Yeah. Like, there's another one where you're talking about Chick Eagles and Jack Lagidus, who wrote the scripts for episode 3, and says, if it were up to me, I'd have hunted them down and effing killed them with a brick. Then gone and burned down their homes.
What?
He's very specific, isn't he?
He is.
I don't want to share his Netflix password.
I want to share him. I'd probably share him, like, if I had one, my Netflix password. Because then he goes to jail.
No, when you said I want to share him, I was thinking, what, is sharing Frank Darabont now a federal crime?
I think it should be.
Oh my God, that's not even Davina McCall level crazy. That is long sleeve padded cell. In fact, no, that's worse than that. I think we're talking full on lobotomy.
Well, he's got what sounds like a mafia name anyway. So
Sorry, I just like saying...
Just for more context.
Yeah.
This is the man who directed The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. That's what bugs me about this. Like, he's done like one of the most feel-good movies by the end of it. It is a feel-good movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I imagine the producers had to, like, cut out a scene where Morgan Freeman just starts punching a man and punching and punching till his head is nothing but a bloody pulp. And he just looks down at his bloodied hands and screams for 5 minutes straight.
Just Stephen King in the background going, I didn't write that.
No. Stephen King in the background going, eh, I probably wrote that bit. I can't even tell anymore.
I don't remember.
I had too many nose clams.
Yes. Some people might not get that joke, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, actually, yeah, that was quite esoteric. That was a reference to, A, the fact that Stephen King used to like a bit of the old white powder.
Yep.
And B, on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, they refer to it as nose clams, which is just my absolute favourite name for drugs ever.
Oh.
What's wrong with him liking a bit of ball 2-in-1?
I mean, even then, I thought that you're supposed to snort it, Andy.
That's probably even worse, like, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you are snorting ball 2-in-1, you get that fresh smell all the time because it's lodged right up your nose.
At least you'll be on your way to being clean.
No, because it's lodged right up your nose, you get the fresh smell all the time. Doesn't matter what everything actually smells like, you'll still have the fresh smell. So the real smell could be like stale urine and vomit. You wouldn't know.
So now I'm just imagining it as like the day after like a massive bender and like it's the big meeting. Someone goes, God, Frank, you stink of booze. But don't worry, I got this. Just like kind of lines out some ball 2-in-1 in his hand, just snorts it up.
Yes.
There, now everything smells great.
Shall we take a break there?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why not?
All right, we'll be back in a moment with what we've been watching.
The world of comics and manga are much, much more complex than I'll ever know. So tune in to 4Panel on the Geek Show Podcast Network to make that whole world a little less intimidating.
And welcome back to the show. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been watching. And while I kind of scream internally at what I'm going to have to do, Andy, you can kick us off.
Yes, well, I watched this last year when it was on. It was on once. And I said then, I never thought I'd ever say that I was watching this on this show, or I never thought I'd ever say I'd be watching it again. But anyway, I've been watching it again. And it's The Crystal Maze.
Okay, when you say you've been watching it again, were you watching a new series or watching the old series as a repeat?
This is a brand new series.
Okay.
And I really like it.
All right.
But this time, it started off with, it's on the fourth, but 5 celebrity specials. So it's more of a charitable type of show at the minute. But you've got Richard Ayoade is the host. And he's playing sort of a more serious Moss character.
Okay.
When he's hosting this.
That sounds like it could actually work with the Crystal Maze if he's channeling Moss.
And he has his own character, so to speak, where he uses these abbreviations such as MINS for minutes or ALIS for automatic lock-in situation. But it's most unique. I'd say
it does look like his entire character thing.
He's in a very pink suit, but he has a prosthetic, well, a hand, like a bronze metal hand on a stick, and he uses that for people to hold, so he drags them to the games. It's very disturbing, especially when he did it to Alex Brooker in the first episode.
Now, when you said he's got a bronze metal hand,
yes.
My first thought was, is he the guy that Bruce Lee fights at the end of Enter the Dragon?
But anyway, it's got 5 episodes for celebrity specials, and then it's got 15 normal shows, which I'd love to apply for as well. But that's this series, so it's going to keep going until about November, December time, I'm guessing. The computer makes a return, but very minimal. But okay. What I do love about it is you've got... Do you remember in the old one where you had Mumsy and I think there was another character I can't really remember?
Yeah.
But this time you've got Jarhead and he's portrayed by Adam Buxton, you know, the comedian.
Is Jarhead a US Marine?
No, he's quite a... Well, you're not close in a sense there, Rob. He's a Jarhead, is a disembodied head in a jar.
So Jarhead is a disembodied head in a jar.
Yeah, and he asks riddles, he gifts the crystals if you can get 2 out of 3 correctly. If you don't, it's an automatic lock-in. Or, as Richard Ayoade would call it, an A-list. But it's really good. It's a lower budget to the original. For example, there's no drawbridge and there's no water to like cross over to get in the crystal dome.
But I like the drawbridge and I like the water.
So did I, but it's still a really good show. It's like watching it, but watching the old thing again. It's really good. The only thing which I'm not a fan of in this one is since there's more episodes in the series, I think there's like maybe 7 or 8 more.
Yeah.
The games can get a bit repetitive. I've seen the same game twice in a row before. Not in the same show, obviously.
Yeah, like, but I mean, with the games themselves, how challenging are they? Are they still as challenging as they were before?
There's some really easy ones, but there are some devastatingly hard. They have one that is an automatic lock-in after you fall on the floor 3 times.
Oh, yeah, but that was in the old one as well.
Yeah, but you have to jump on like 3 or 4 round like pedestals type.
Okay.
But these pedestals are spinning really fast.
Okay.
So you have to jump on them. While you're getting dizzy, jump on the other one, and then jump on the other one. I think, oh, God.
It sounds more like a game from Wipeout.
But it's harder. It's definitely harder, but harder games is good. And I do definitely recommend, if you love the Crystal Maze, give it a watch.
Yeah, well, I know that you like things when they're good and hard.
Very good joke there, Rob.
Yes.
Very good.
I mean, I'm still worried because my connection's been really bad. So most of what I heard of that is just, he's got a bronze hand and he uses it to... And then I never found out what he uses it to do.
Crystal Maze.
I was going to say he uses his special hand to take him to another room, but that sounds even worse.
Especially after you were talking about things being good and hard. Okay. Me, I've been watching a very interesting thing called The Handmaid's Tale. Now, I just want to point out, this is not to be confused with the South Korean film called The Handmaiden. They are 2 very different things.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Anyway, The Handmaid's Tale is based on the... I think it's mid-80s the book came out. From Margaret Atwood. It's a dystopian tale about a fallen United States of America. And most of the story takes place in the Republic of... I can't remember the name. Is it G something? Gilead? Was it Gilead? Something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it might be Gilead.
Anyway.
That sounds right.
It's basically like a religious dictatorship. The United States fell after a stage attack kills the president and most of the Congress. And then a Christian Reconstructionist movement, they basically take over, effectively. And the story is about a woman called Offred, and she is the titular handmaid. Now, I started watching this not knowing anything about it. It was being advertised, and it seemed to be the next big thing. I thought, I don't know. It's called The Handmaid's Tale. It seems a bit like a period drama, looking at the costume, everything like that. And I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. I'm not a big fan of period drama. only to find out that it wasn't a period drama.
But you've read the outfits that you were deliberately supposed to look like period clothes.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I've made a funny. Because there's two meanings of period, and both are incredibly appropriate for The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes, yes, they are. I've got to say, I was very, very surprised at how much I enjoy this series. It's this weird combination of things. It's got a little bit of Red State in there because of the whole kind of indoctrination and everything like that. And they're up against a bunch of crazy people with guns who are heavily religious. So it's got a little, it's got elements of Red State, but it's also got weird elements of other things in there as well. And I love the way this, I love where the story's at right now, you know, with Offred and, I've forgotten his name. Damn it.
Joseph Fiennes.
Hey?
I mean, I'd love the characters, I just call them by their actor names, like Joseph Fiennes.
No. The, what's his name? Is it?
Oh, Driver Man. Just whatever a driver can.
The African-American guy with glasses. Oh, it looks African-American. Damn it, what's his name? His name's gone.
Okay, so don't worry, everyone. I'm taking this over now and saving you from Rob. Just robbing about.
I'm still confused by the Netflix being a federal crime.
It's okay, Bob, we are. So, like, the actual plot of The Handmaid's Tale is basically the idea... It's part of why the United States fell apart is... Much like Children of Men, people just stopped being fertile, and there's next to no new children being made. So what's happened is this religious group that's taken over America basically rounded up all the women capable of having children and basically made them like slaves to their leaders, and their only duty in life is to like have children, which is super grim.
Yep.
That's super grim, and that's kind of what the actual plot of The Handmaid's Tale is.
Yeah. Cause,
making a pass back to Rob.
Yeah. Anyway, Offred is the titular handmaid, and it goes through a lot of what she has to deal with in this kind of situation. How would you describe it? It's like a dystopian drama, but it's got action in there as well, which... sometimes doesn't feel quite real. You know, they have long periods where it seems more like you're watching someone's dream because of the lighting and, you know, the soft focus, stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, there's kind of this weird, trippy element to it.
Which can, I suppose, be a little bit confusing. It does make you think about what you've just watched and think, okay, which bits of that were important, which bits of that were actually, you know, in story order, because it does kind of jump around a bit as well. So you're not actually quite sure at certain times which bits are actually memory and which bits are current. And I don't know if the actual novel is written in the same way.
I think maybe not, because from what I've seen, the novel itself is quite short.
Yeah.
So I think they've definitely extrapolated a lot of their own stuff.
Yeah. I've got to say, Elizabeth Moss is really good.
Oh, she is fantastic.
Yeah, she is really good. Joseph Fiennes is, he's good anyway. We know he's good.
He's Joseph Fiennes, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. There's not much you can say about that. I do like Otie Fagbeni. He's the one who plays Luke, June's husband. I remember his name now. Yeah. And I like his character a lot because he seems kind of bumbling. And he seems kind of not with it half the time. But you can see just how dedicated he is to his wife.
Yeah, I like that. I also think Alexis Bledel does a really good job.
Oh, she's the one who plays Off-Glen, isn't she?
Yeah, Off-Glen.
Yeah.
Just that surreal moment where, like, Offred goes to meet one of her friends. And, like, you see, like, turn from the hood, and it's Rory Gilmore.
Yes. The other thing I like as well with this is this new... national order of things. It's very, very fascist. And one of the things that struck me about it was, because you know how they refer to Offglen, they call her a gender traitor.
Yeah, because she's a lesbian. And oof.
Yes.
That's cutting close to certain factions of modern-day America.
Yep. I like the kind of the parallels with modern day America, and it's weird to think that Margaret Atwood wrote this in 1985, but I mean, it's what, 32 years since the book came out?
Yeah, I think it's too fair. This show came out like just the right time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird how you get shows like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like convenient to be able to touch on something that's very important, like right now.
Yeah. I've got to say, though, Handmaid's Tale, if you haven't watched it, watch it. It really is good.
Actually, another thing I like.
Yeah.
Is because we said all this, and it is very serious.
Yes.
But it also knows how to lighten the mood sometimes.
It does. It does it really well as well.
Like there's a great bit at the end of episode 2, I think, where Offred decides like she's going to fight back against her oppressors.
Yeah.
And walk through the house. And it's to like the Breakfast Club music.
Yes.
But then she sees that like Offred has been replaced and just the music cuts out and she just swears.
Yeah, that bit got me. I like how it does the humour. I like how it approaches humour. It doesn't treat it as this club over the head. It's getting too dark. We need to lighten the mood. We need to crowbar all this stuff in.
Yeah, but it's good at kind of putting out the sort of gallows humour.
Yeah. It is very gallows humour. But, I mean, as you said, it is a grim story. It is a very, very grim story. Especially when given the fact that Offred spends a lot of the time thinking that Luke's dead.
Which he may or may not be.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know. Last she heard, she can just sort of run away and then heard some gunshots.
Yep. So, anyway, that was The Handmaid's Tale. It's definitely a recommend from me.
Yeah, it's an absolutely cracking show.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
It sure is an absolutely cracking show. Something we got sent in, which is season 1 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
You don't sound too happy there.
Of course I'm not happy. It's Power Rangers. This isn't even like, I mean, we've had the entire series. It's like part 1, like the first 30 out of 60 episodes.
I was going to say, isn't the first season like 60 episodes? Isn't it like, if you do one episode a week, isn't it like a year long?
Yeah. Yeah, probably something like that. And let me tell you, it was certainly no skin off like Haim Sabin's bones to do an episode a week. Because it's 90% just the same recycled footage again and again and again.
With people doing spins and back kicks and going, ha! And those weird fireworks going off all over the place.
Yeah, like you punch a Power Ranger and they explode in sparks.
Yes. Better than exploding the coins.
Like this isn't just like a random thing. I believe they've sort of re-released the original series because of the Power Ranger movie that happened a while ago. And certainly we're not doing this so long after the movie came out because I've been putting off watching this for as long as I possibly could.
Perish the thought.
Oh, God. I feel for you, Andrew, sitting through 30 episodes. I've just checked, though, Andrew, as well. There was 60 episodes in the first season.
Yeah, and that was just season 1 of, like, 3.
3, and the next one was 52, and then 33.
Oh, my God.
And then you had an alien one, but I don't know what that one is.
Power Rangers SPD, wasn't it?
There's been, like, so many different Power Rangers series.
But, you've seen 30 of, like, over 100 episodes of that show.
Well, I mean, we're all adults here. I think I can just come out and say it. I did not watch every single episode of Power Rangers. Because you do not need to watch every single episode of Power Rangers. Like, you watch a few and you get the general gist of it.
Yeah.
Like, teens are doing something teeny, monster shows up, completely unrelated storyline happens, Power Rangers fight monster, they get beaten up, then suddenly they win because it's about that time in the episode. Then Vita yells, "Magic wand, make my monster growl!" in that exact voice. And but literally no different from what the actress says that.
Doesn't it all take place in, like, one town in America as well?
Yeah, one town in America seems to be composed of a lot of different random locations. Like, there's beaches and mountains and garbage dumps.
Sounds pretty big for a town.
Yeah, it's almost like they've taken footage from a completely unrelated Japanese show and desperately tried to edit it in to a new format.
Oh. Not just one Japanese show. They went full on Battle of the Planets with this. Because, you know, do you remember the old, there's an old cartoon called Battle of the Planets. And what they did, they basically took footage from, I think it was 3 or 4 different anime series and put them all together and then redubbed it and called it Battle of the Planets. They did the same thing with Robotech, took like different things from Macross and a couple of other shows. And I think Space Battleship Yamato was one of the shows they took things from as well. And then they called it Robotech.
Yeah, so, like, I don't understand why. Like, exactly. I get the idea that, like, in the 90s, assuming American children somehow wouldn't want a show about, like, dinosaur prince and princesses that, like, wake up in the modern world and fight crime. Just saying, like, okay, it's easier if we just make these characters American teenagers.
Yeah.
But then why not just, like, make the plot of the episode vaguely the same as the Japanese show.
But here's the thing, right?
Why do Trini and Kimberly have to be at a dump, but then suddenly a monster shows up and it's on a beach and they have to go to a different beach, but then also Goldar shows up in a completely different location for no goddamn reason?
This is the reason why, right? The TV show adapted stock footage from the Japanese TV series Kyoryu Sentai Zyuranger, which was the 16th installment of Toei's Super Sentai franchise. The 16th installment, right? So they had like 15 other shows that they could choose from that came before. And then the second series of Power Rangers and the third series, they also took stock footage from Gosei Sentai Dai Ranger and Ninja Sentai Kaku Ranger.
Okay, but all I'm saying is...
Yeah.
If you're using footage of the Power Rangers fighting a monster on a beach, why not just make the plot of the episode that the Power Rangers kids go to a beach?
Yes.
Like, why all these elaborate plots?
Hmm. What I used to remember, though, years ago, because I used to watch it when I was a kid, was this footage that they take from these other Japanese programs. I used to think there mustn't be much of it, because they do use the exact same footage for nearly every single episode.
Yeah, but the thing is...
But I swear to God, if I have to hear Zack say the word Mastodon one more time... Also, that's another thing. Mastodons and saber-toothed tigers aren't dinosaurs.
Nope, they're not. But here's the thing. When this came out, I think it was 94, I think it came out. I remember this. There was a thing about it being too violent for kids.
Well...
How can they tell? Because the fight scenes are just nonsense. It's flailing about. And until suddenly the power... Like, there's one bit where there's a monster and it's like only the Red and Black Rangers fighting him. Who, yes, are played by the Native American and the African American.
Yes.
Bad Power Rangers. So they're fighting like a toad monster. By the way, the toad monster that eats people, which just... What the hell, Japan? So they're fighting that and they're losing. And they say, like, uh-oh, we better pull back and think of another plan. But then, like, it's the next scene. And so they're just back to, like, just hitting him with their weapons.
Yep.
That explode, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, like the sword that explodes. Because why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Power Rangers, it was criticised for that. It was criticised for its racial overtones. Quite early on, people noticed it.
Which, it may be racist... But I do appreciate it for being trans-positive. Because, like, as an adult, my eyes can clearly see the way that the yellow Power Ranger changes from being, like, obviously a teenage girl to very obviously a man. like he is this big, bulky-shouldered dude. Like, it's one of those things that you watch, how did I not notice this as a kid?
This is true. There's nothing I can say.
Anyway, yeah, there's nothing you can say. And anyway, all this is kind of redundant. Because I feel like anyone who's buying Power Rangers, yes, you know it's bad. Like the main thing you watch it for is kind of getting some friends around, maybe getting a little bit drunk and just having some fun with it. And I think to an extent that works.
Hmm.
Like, there's some fantastic innuendo. Like, literally the first thing where, like, Rita comes out of a prison thing and says, she's like, I'm going to blow up Earth. It's going to be my coming out party.
What?
Because she's coming out of the prison, Rob. I don't know what other way you could take that.
I don't know.
But again, well done, Power Rangers, having a villain who is out and proud.
Yes.
And whose voice also in no way syncs up with their lip movements.
That's a good skill to have.
Oh, there's also like a fantastic bit in the second episode where all the Power Rangers get like wrist communicator things and they're like these ridiculously huge, bulky brick things. And Kimberly just looks and goes, wow, it's so totally 90s. Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, one thing that I want to point out. You know, you were talking about the LGBT stuff in Power Rangers. The Simpsons did an amazing joke about it. They've got Ned Flanders, who is deeply, deeply Christian, even the bits that contradict the other bits. And he's got a group going on, and he introduces it as an LGBT group meeting. And I was like, what? It's the Left Gifted Bidextrous and Trans-Handed Organization. Which I thought was an amazing thing to just include in the episode as a throwaway gag.
That is very good.
They got one guy who's...
That's much better than like anything in Power Rangers.
Yeah. They got one guy in the clip who he's drops his cup. He goes, I'm sorry, I'm a post-op trans-hander. I know I should laugh at the joke, but it's just so good.
But see, that's an actual funny joke that you can laugh at.
Yes.
This is the problem with Power Rangers, that like, even if you're watching it, like, to make fun of, it's hard to keep going. Because it's so painfully unaware. And like, all the stuff that, it's bad in a funny way, but also like, in a really cynical way. Like, you can just see in every scene where the producers have gone, who cares, kids? They're too dumb to understand this show anyway.
And when you get right down to it, the whole Power Rangers thing, especially when it went across to America, it became deeply cynical. When you look at the original Japanese stuff, the Japanese Ranger stuff, or the Super Sentai stuff, as it is in Japan, yes, okay, it's a repeated formula from episode to episode, but it's not aimed at teenagers, it's aimed at young children. We're talking like 8 years old and under, I suppose. You know, 10 years old and under. And they do like these, roaming stage shows where they have people dressed up in costume doing these fake fight scenes and stuff like that. You know, going around shopping malls and stuff. And they get like all the kids involved and the kids get into, you know, get in on the action. And, like, it's some kind of weird pantomime thing. But that's a big thing for it. And I think without having that sort of thing with the actual show, you lose half the show. Because it's supposed to be campy and formulaic, but it's supposed to be easy for the kids to understand as well. These are the bad guys over here.
It certainly is campy and formulaic.
Yeah. You know, it's not meant to do any of the He-Man type morality stuff. You know, at the end of it, it's not meant. You're not meant to look at the camera and go, stay in school, kids, don't do drugs.
Which, I mean, is basically like what Power Rangers does, just a constant, hey, kids, don't be jerks to your friends.
But that's what I mean.
Don't pollute.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It went across to America and they added their high-handed morality into it, and just that's part of what ruins it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say things do pick up a little bit, like when the Green Power Ranger gets introduced, because then there's like an actual plot that goes from episode to episode.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of like looking for the few desperate crumbs of actual narrative structure.
Don't eat them.
Ripping to them because, like, I recognize this as actual storytelling rather than just things spin around for 20 minutes.
Give me story or give me death.
But still, it has Amy Jo Johnson.
Yeah. Everybody just remembers her now.
Actually, I do want to say, like, she is basically like, the best bit of Power Rangers. And not just because, like, she was possibly the first person I ever had a crush on.
Yeah.
Like, she seems to be, like, the one person who gets how to have fun with it. Like, she will just be cheesy and over the top and, like, genuinely quite enjoyable.
Wasn't she like the Pink Ranger?
Yeah, she was the Pink Ranger. But like when they're doing like the morphing things where they say all the animals and there's like Mastodon, these are Triceratops, Trinizol, Sabretooth, Tiger, Austinzol, Tyrannosaurus. But then Kimberly just comes and yells, Pterodactyl! It's just nice to see someone who seems like they're having fun.
Apparently she still has fun with it. I've heard that she does like random appearances dressed as the Pink Ranger.
That's cool. She's a cool person.
Sometimes with a guitar. So, yeah.
You probably missed that episode.
I mean, you joke, but there probably is absolutely an episode where she plays the guitar.
Probably, yeah. Oh.
Also, there's one thing I realised I was absolutely wrong on as a child.
What's that?
Because back then, Billy was my favourite Power Ranger. Because, you know, he was like the awkward nerdy one. It's like, oh, I am an awkward nerdy kid. I identify with this. But no, he's absolutely the worst. Like, maybe, Billy, everyone picks on you because you keep saying affirmative instead of yes. Speak like a normal goddamn person, for Christ's sakes. Stop with the... Yes, this is certainly moving in a linear direction. It's going in a straight line, Billy. Just say a straight line. Goddamn, man. Every episode. It genuinely annoys me.
I think we need to end it there before Andrew talks himself into finding the Power Rangers and...
Well, I don't even get to mention the first episode. What, where Zach fights putties using his sweet dance moves. And I feel like it's maybe a little bit racist.
You just have mentioned it, though.
Just like I planned.
Anyway, we're at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you until the next time. All of our shows are available on Audioboom, iTunes, and various other podcast providers. So if you are listening through one of those, then subscribe, and it'll keep you up to date with all the shows on the Geek Show Podcast Network, which we are part of. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it for the info dump. We'll see you again next time on the box. Whenever that next time is, we're not sure, but there will be a next time. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been the Beige Power Ranger.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening on Putty Talk. Because that's how they speak, guys. I completely forgot that was how they speak. Goddamn, Power Rangers is the worst.